Good evening. It is Monday. I'm Michael Cohen with producer Andre Holgate. This is the Capital City Recap. Thanks for joining us. Well, the first live images of the Colorado movie theater shooter out today, showing 24-year-old James Holmes in court with his hair dyed bright red, appearing expressionless, even dazed or drugged. So what are we to make of this bizarre scene, and how are we to understand the reason for last week's massacre? Mary Ellen O'Toole is a retired senior FBI profiler and the author of the new book, Dangerous Instincts, How Gut Feelings Betray Us. Find her online at maryellenotoole.com. Mary, thanks for joining us on WILS.
You're very welcome.
Now, did you see the video this morning of him sitting in the courtroom? If so, what is your initial reaction to his demeanor? Did it reveal anything about his mental condition?
Well, I did see it, and I watched his demeanor, and what I would say is this. We want to be very careful about drawing conclusions about his demeanor, and the reason I say that is this. Before we, in the FBI, before we could size someone up or assess them in a particular situation, what we needed was what we would call a baseline of behavior. In other words, we would need to know, is this this the way someone would act under extreme pressure? Now, granted, we couldn't go back into this person's background and find a similar situation to his appearance in court today, but we'd still want to know on previous occasions when this person has been held accountable for making mistakes or he was getting in trouble for something, what was his demeanor? And is this, at least on some level, consistent with how he's behaved in the past or terribly inconsistent with how he's behaved in the past? So before I would draw any conclusions, I would want to get that baseline of behavior.
What do you make so far of the information that's coming out from those who were in school with him, some that were in this PhD neuroscience program with him, that said there was never any indication from him, any violent outburst, any sign that he had any kind of potential to do the act that he's alleged to have done here?
Well, I would say as time goes on, they'll be interviewing people who spent more time with him as opposed to someone that may have known him from even as recently as his college days. So what they'll do is identify people that, for example, spent a lot of time with him in the lab there at the university, people that were around him at different times throughout the day, someone that really has a lot more time and experience in his behavior and watching his behavior. So I think right now the people who are coming forward are people that may have seen him but in a very limited capacity, and frankly they also may not have seen, they may have seen some behaviors that, like as an FBI profiler, I may say could be indicative of some future problems, but without a certain amount of training and background, some behavior just goes missed by a lot of people. It's not intentional, it just goes missed.
Other than being a loner, though, is there anything about him that that you'd say as a profiler would have been a hint to this potential shooting spree that he went on? I mean, essentially what we know is that he was very successful academically and came from a what appears to be a stable middle-class home.
Sure, and it would be a myth for us to believe that people, there are three myths out there that I think are important, and one of them is that people who act out violently all come from dysfunctional homes. That would be myth number one. Myth number two is that people who act out violently have to be quote-unquote crazy or terribly mentally unbalanced. And then the third myth is that really intelligent people are not capable of acting out in an extremely violent manner. So those are the three myths that I think are important, because I'm hearing a lot of people over the last 3 days, 4 days, talking about the fact that he's so smart, the fact that maybe he had to come from a dysfunctional family or that he has to be mentally ill have to be a part of this formula, and that's simply not the case.
I'm talking to Mary Ellen O'Toole, a retired senior FBI profiler, author of the book Dangerous Instincts, How Gut Feelings Betray Us. Now, motive is going to be a clear issue here because this appears to be such a random act of a horrible violence. How much of that plays into understanding the profile of this person, Mr. Holmes, and is there likely going to be any clear motive assigned to this act?
Well, certainly the prosecution in this case, the state of Colorado does not require that the prosecutor establish a motive. But the people on the jury and the people in the public, they definitely want to know a motive. And so they being the investigators, will be working hard to conduct the kinds of interviews that will help to identify what some of these motives are. And it's been my experience in working on these kinds of cases, mass homicides, whether in the workplace or in school or in a campus, there are multiple motives. There's not one singular motive. And when the thoughts of acting out violently begin with these kinds of individuals, they go back for days, weeks, or months, and certainly precede the actual purchase, for example, of weapons or explosives. So what they're thinking prior to even purchasing the weapons could be actually go to one motive, and then as they continue with their planning and they're thinking about it and they become more involved in it, the motives can change and become more complicated and more involved.
What about this indication that he was this absolute loner? Nobody knew what he was up to, what he was planning. Is that likely? Is that often the case? Or did someone probably know something as this plot was moving along?
Well, I think people could have known like bits and pieces, but not connected the dots. That's not to suggest at all that there's someone out there who's in a conspiracy with this person. But from my experience with these kinds of cases, that people will open the book to page 20, and maybe somebody else opens the book to page 25, and they see different kinds of behaviors, but they don't jump to the conclusion that this person may be contemplating an extreme act of mass homicide. I do think it was interesting that the person that owned the firing range, if that is eventually corroborated, that it was kind of his opinion that he was not going to let this person use his range because he was very concerned about the message on his answering machine. And so those are the kinds of things that investigators will begin to tear apart and look at as they go through his computer, his journals, his writings, his communications to find out what was out there for other people to see and who were those people that very likely saw things or heard things, but they just didn't honestly put together some dots.
Now, tell me about interviewing these subjects, these suspects, after the killing. How is that approached in the immediate hours after a horrific crime like that? Are they directly and aggressively questioned to try to understand why they have done this and what exactly occurred?
Well, they would be, but there would certainly be consideration given to making sure that as an interviewer you did it exactly by the book, because anything that the suspect told you could be compromised, for example, if you did not read his Miranda rights. So, and at the moment where the suspect would say, "I want an attorney," then the interview terminates. And unless he purposely and directly wants to reinitiate the interview, as a law enforcement person, that interview has to be terminated. So they would have had a public safety issue here, which means that once they became aware that there could have been explosives in his apartment, that would have been a public safety issue. But nonetheless, if he said he wanted an attorney and he no longer wanted to participate in that interview, there was very little that they could have done.
Now, he was captured right behind the movie theater at the location of the shooting. Had he managed to get away, because he was apparently wearing a mask during the shooting, and there would not potentially have been a physical identification of him, with what we know about him, do you think he could have very well slipped under the radar for a long time and been hard to identify as a suspect in the shooting?
I don't. And the reason that I say that is, you know, based on as much forensic evidence as they would have had at the scene, I think that, for example, even with the, you know, the type of weapons, I think ultimately they would have identified him. I would hope they would have been able to identify them fairly quickly, but I think that they would have been.
As a former FBI profiler, when we have these kinds of shootings, what is it that we are able to learn? What is it the FBI is able to learn when in many ways it looks like an irrational act that an irrational person has committed here? Is there any kind of learning that happens after an incident like this that maybe helps prevent future ones from occurring?
There really is. There really is. And what the FBI and law enforcement will be looking for, again, are the days and the weeks and the months that have led up to this event. And they will be looking for, subtle though they may be, they will be looking for behaviors that this person did evidence, and maybe not as strongly as in other cases. And what steps did he take to fly under the radar screen purposely? And what warning signs did he put out there? What steps did he take to practice with the weapons, to set off the explosives? How did he do it? Where did he feel like he could be comfortable in purchasing all of these things? So there will be a lot of information that will be specific to this case, but it will contribute to a generalized knowledge of these kinds of incidents.
Mary Ellen O'Toole, a retired senior FBI profiler, the author of the book Dangerous Instincts, How Gut Feelings Betray Us. You can find her online at MaryEllenO'Toole.com. Mary, thank you so much for joining us on WILS this evening.
It was totally my pleasure. Thank you.
We're coming right back. I'm Michael Cohen. You're listening to 1320 WILS.